Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling COBRA, that's the Consolidated Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act.
Quite a mouthful.
It is. We've got a pretty comprehensive document here, and our goal is really to pull out the key knowledge.
Mm.
You know, what is COBRA? Why is it still so vital, especially in today's shifting job market?
Right.
And how does it fit in with the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, that interaction is key.
Think of this as your shortcut, basically, to understanding COBRA's essential bits. We'll cover its history, how it operates, and the updates that make it really relevant right now in 2025.
Exactly. We're going to, you know, look at the reasons it was created in the first place,
yep.
get into the nuts and bolts of how it actually functions.
Right.
And really trying to clarify its role within our current healthcare system, especially, like you said, considering the ACA.
Okay, so let's set the scene. Before COBRA existed,
yeah.
imagine this. You lose your job.
Yeah.
And just like that, poof, your health insurance disappears too.
It was a huge cliff for people, left a lot of folks facing, well, serious financial risk.
I can only imagine.
Precisely. Picture suddenly being uninsured, maybe during unemployment, maybe between jobs. The financial vulnerability, especially for families, it was immense.
So COBRA was the answer.
It was the direct response.
Hmm.
Enacted back in 1986, signed by President Reagan.
Right.
And at the time, it was pretty revolutionary, really. The whole idea was offering temporary continuation of group health coverage.
When certain things happened, these specific life events.
Exactly. Events that triggered losing that coverage. It was a groundbreaking concept then.
And this initially applied to larger companies, wasn't it?
Yes. The starting point was employers with 20 or more employees. They had to offer this continuation.
Right.
But, and this is important to remember, while COBRA provided that crucial protection, it wasn't free.
Ah, right. The cost factor.
Individuals who picked COBRA, they could be required to pay, well, up to 102% of the full premium.
102%. Wow. So the employer's share, your share, plus a bit extra for admin.
You got it.
Now, fast forward to 2025. We've had the ACA, lots of healthcare policy changes. You might think COBRA is not as important anymore.
That's a common thought, but actually, no. It remains a really, really important piece of the puzzle.
How so?
Well, even with the ACA and the health insurance marketplaces now, COBRA still fills a very specific, very crucial need.
Like what?
For many people, especially those, you know, going through job changes, it's often the preferred option.
Why is that?
Because they want to keep their existing doctors.
Right.
They want to keep that same provider network, the same benefit structure they had with their old employer's plan. They know it. They trust it.
Ah, continuity of care. That makes perfect sense, especially with how dynamic the job market is. People move around a lot more now.
They really do. It's actually quite striking. The average worker, I mean, the stats show they change jobs a significant number of times. We're talking figures around like 12 times on average over a career.
12 times. Wow.
And all that movement, it naturally leads to more frequent health insurance transitions, right?
Yeah, stands to reason.
So COBRA acts as that vital bridge during those gaps. Plus, think about the rise of the gig economy, contract work.
Right. More people cycling in and out of traditional employer coverage.
Exactly. It just underscores the need for these temporary coverage solutions like COBRA.
So for anyone listening who works in insurance or HR, understanding COBRA isn't just about knowing some old rule. It's like actively relevant day to day.
Absolutely. A thorough grasp of COBRA's, you know, intricacies, it's essential. Insurance pros need to be able to advise both employers on their legal duties.
And employees on what their options actually are when they hit one of these qualifying events.
Precisely. It's crucial advice they're giving.
Okay, let's dig into that interaction between COBRA and the Affordable Care Act, the ACA. It feels like the ACA really shook things up, gave people alternatives they didn't have before.
It absolutely did. If you step back, the ACA in 2010, it fundamentally reshaped the whole landscape of continuation coverage.
How so?
Suddenly, COBRA wasn't the only option. It wasn't the only game in town anymore.
Right, because the ACA set up the health insurance marketplaces, the exchanges.
Exactly. Those marketplaces created completely new ways for people facing those same life events, job loss, divorce, etc. The things that trigger COBRA.
To find health coverage somewhere else.
Yes. So COBRA went from being often the only choice to being one of several important choices you have to weigh.
And I bet affordability became a huge comparison point.
Oh, absolutely. This raises a really critical point. ACA marketplace plans, they often come with income-based premium subsidies or tax credits.
Right, to help paying the premiums.
And for many people, especially folks with moderate incomes, those subsidies can make a marketplace plan way more affordable than paying that full 102% Cobra Premium.
That kind of financial help, yeah, that could make a massive difference for a family budget.
Huge difference.
What about actually enrolling in these marketplace plans? Is there, like, a specific time you have to do it?
Good question. The ACA created what are called Special Enrollment Periods, or SAPs.
SAP.
And this is key. It means if you lose your employer coverage, you can enroll in a marketplace plan even if it's outside the normal yearly open enrollment window.
So you're not stuck waiting potentially months for the next January enrollment.
Correct. It makes for a much smoother transition to get new coverage quickly.
Got it.
And it's also vital to remember, both COBRA plans and ACA marketplace plans, they both have to follow the ACA's rules.
What kind of rules?
Things like covering essential health benefits, no lifetime or annual dollar limits on coverage, and crucially, not denying coverage because of pre-existing conditions.
So in terms of what's actually covered, the basic protections are similar, but the length of time you can have the coverage, that's a big difference, right? COBRA feels temporary.
That's a central difference, yes. COBRA is absolutely designed as a temporary fix. Typically, it gives you coverage for, say, 18 to 36 months. It depends on why you qualified.
Okay.
ACA marketplace plans, though, you can keep those indefinitely, basically, as long as you keep paying the premiums.
COBRA's been around since 86, you said. That's a long time. It must have changed a bit over the years to keep up.
It has definitely evolved, yeah. We've seen some pretty notable changes.
Like what?
Well, for instance, back during the financial crisis, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, ARRA, in 2009.
Yeah, I remember that.
It included a temporary subsidy, helped people afford their COBRA premiums for a while. That was a big government intervention during a tough economic time.
Right, that must have been a lifeline for a lot of families who were suddenly out of work.
It was. It was a temporary 65% premium subsidy specifically for involuntary job loss between roughly late 2008 and mid-2010.
Hmm.
More recently, after all the COVID-19 emergency extensions ended, we've seen a return to the standard deadlines for COBRA that happened through 2022, 2023, into 2024.
Back to normal, so to speak.
Pretty much.
And it feels like everything is going digital these days. Benefits administration, too.
Yes, definitely. In 2023, there were updated rules allowing electronic delivery of COBRA notices, but under specific conditions. It reflects that broader shift to online benefits management.
Okay.
And we've also seen clarifications in the last few years about how COBRA fits in with newer types of health plans like ICA Shares and QSCHRAs. Those are specific kinds of health reimbursement arrangements.
Always something new to track. Okay, let's really get into the core mechanics. How does COBRA actually work? What are the fundamentals someone absolutely needs to grasp?
Okay, at its core, the main principle is this. COBRA lets you continue the exact same health coverage you had as an active employee.
Exactly the same.
Yes. Same plan, same benefits package, same deductibles, co-pays, access to the same network of doctors and hospitals. You're not getting like a stripped down version.
So it's not some bare bones policy just to get you by.
Not at all. But, and this is big but, there's a major shift in who pays.
Back to the cost.
Right. As a COBRA beneficiary, you become responsible for the entire premium.
The whole thing.
The whole thing. Both the part your employer used to pay and the part you paid yourself through payroll deductions. Plus, that extra administrative fee up to 2%.
Wow. That could easily mean a huge jump in monthly healthcare costs for someone.
It certainly can. It's often a shock. And it's crucial to remember, COBRA is temporary.
Right. You said that. It's a bridge.
Exactly. It's meant to bridge a gap, not be your forever healthcare plan. The duration is limited by law, depends on why you qualified.
And it doesn't just happen automatically, right? You have to actively choose it.
That's another key point. It's not automatic. Eligible folks have to actively elect COBRA. You have to make a conscious choice to sign up.
And it's about continuing what you had. It doesn't suddenly open up new plan choices you didn't have before losing coverage.
Precisely. It's a continuation of your existing group coverage. Understanding these basics is, well, really vital if you're facing a qualifying event and trying to decide if COBRA's right for you.
Okay. Now, who actually has to offer COBRA? What kinds of employers fall under these rules?
The main federal COBRA rules apply primarily to private sector employers. Specifically, those who had 20 or more employees for more than half of the business days in the previous calendar year.
And that's counting both full-time and part-time folks?
Yes. Both count towards that 20-employee threshold.
What about public sector jobs, government employees?
Good question. State and local government employers, they're generally covered by similar rules under the Public Health Service Act. It pretty much mirrors federal COBRA.
Okay.
Also, employee organizations like unions, if they maintain a group health plan, they also have to follow COBRA rules.
Are there exceptions? Any employers who don't have to offer COBRA?
Yes, there are a few key exemptions. Generally, small employers, those with fewer than 20 employees, are exempt from federal COBRA.
Fewer than 20, okay.
And this is a big but. You really need to know that many states have their own laws, often called mini COBRA laws. Yeah. And these state laws often do apply continuation coverage rules to those smaller employers, sometimes down to businesses with just 2 to 19 employees. So you can't just assume a small employer is off the hook.
Ah, so state law might still require it. Good to know. Any other exemptions?
The federal government itself has separate rules for its employees under their own health benefits program. And certain church plans, typically associated with religious organizations, might also be exempt.
Okay, so it's not just federal law. You have to check state rules, too.
Exactly. And just to add, things like basic life insurance policies, those generally aren't covered by COBRA continuation.
Got it. Okay, so if you do elect COBRA, what kind of medical care does it cover? Is it comprehensive?
The definition is intentionally broad. It's designed to cover a really wide range of healthcare services and items.
Like what specifically?
Well, obviously diagnosis and treatment for illnesses and injuries, but also things affecting the body's structure or function, transportation needed for medical care, prescription drugs, medical equipment, supplies.
Mental health, too.
Yes, definitely. Mental health services, substance use disorder treatment, preventive care like checkups and screenings, and also maternity and pediatric care.
So it's the full package?
Pretty much. The key takeaway for you is if you elect COBRA, you continue getting the same comprehensive benefits package you had as an active employee. You can't, like, cherry pick just the bits you want. It's all or nothing, the whole plan.
Okay, now let's nail down these specific events that make someone eligible. What are these qualifying events? Let's start with the employee themselves.
Right. For the covered employee, the main qualifying events leading to a loss of coverage are termination of employment. That can be voluntary or involuntary.
Resigning or getting laid off, for example.
Yes, exactly. Resignation, layoff, discharge. But there's a big exception. Termination for gross misconduct. That usually disqualifies you.
Gross misconduct. That sounds serious. Yeah. And maybe a bit vague.
It is a bit vague. The term isn't actually defined in the COBRA law itself. Courts generally interpret it as, you know, really bad, willful behavior that shows a flagrant disregard for the employer's interests. It's a pretty high bar.
Okay. So aside from termination, without gross misconduct, what else?
The other main one for the employee is a reduction in their work hours.
How does that work?
If your hours are cut to the point where you no longer qualify for the employer's health plan, maybe going from full-time to part-time, taking an unpaid leave, a strike, a temporary layoff, even seasonal work changes, that reduction can be a qualifying event.
Got it. What about the employee's spouse? What events qualify them?
For a spouse, qualifying events include the death of the covered employee, also, divorce or legal separation, specifically when the final decree is issued, or there's a legal separation agreement or annulment.
Okay.
And another one is if the covered employee becomes entitled to Medicare. If that causes the spouse to lose coverage under the employer plan, that's a qualifying event for the spouse.
Makes sense. And for dependent children, what triggers their eligibility?
The main one for kids is losing their status as a dependent under the plan's rules.
Like aging out.
Exactly. Usually happens when they hit the maximum age limit, which under the ACA is generally age 26 now.
Right.
It could also happen if they lose full-time student status, if the plan requires that for older dependents, or maybe if they get married, if marriage affects dependency under that specific plan.
And like spouses, they'd also qualify if the employee has their own qualifying event, like termination.
Yes, exactly. Termination or reduction in hours for the employee makes the dependents qualified beneficiaries, too. As does the employee's death or Medicare entitlement if it causes the dependents to lose coverage.
So if one of these events happens, who are the actual people eligible for COBRA? Who are these qualified beneficiaries?
Okay, a qualified beneficiary is basically anyone covered by the group health plan on the day before the qualifying event occurred.
So the employee, the spouse, the kids.
Right. Employee, spouse, dependent children who are covered then. And what's really interesting is that each one has their own independent rights under COBRA.
Independent rights. What does that mean practically?
It means each person can choose for themselves whether to elect COBRA or waive it.
Ah, So a husband could take it, but the wife could decide not to, or vice versa.
Exactly. Or one child elects, another doesn't. They also each get to choose among plan options if there are choices during open enrollment.
Interesting. Anyone else count as a qualified beneficiary?
Yes. Sometimes retirees and their families, specifically in certain employer bankruptcy situations. Also, a child born to or adopted by the covered employee during a COBRA coverage period becomes a qualified beneficiary, too.
Good to know about newborns. Who doesn't qualify then?
Well, generally, anyone who wasn't actually covered by the plan the day before the event, and like we said, the employee themselves might not qualify if they were terminated for gross misconduct, though their eligible dependents usually still would.
Okay, qualifying event happens. Documentation time. What kind of paperwork is actually needed for COBRA?
Keeping good records is really crucial for COBRA compliance. The specific documents depend on the event, of course.
Like for a job loss.
For termination or reduced hours, you typically need the formal termination notice, maybe payroll records showing the hour change, documentation of the resignation or layoff.
Okay. What about other events?
If the employee passes away, you'd need a death certificate or maybe an official obituary. For divorce or legal separation, the final divorce decree or the separation agreement.
Makes sense.
If it's Medicare entitlement triggering things, usually a copy of the Medicare card or enrollment confirmation. And for a child losing dependent status, it could be a birth certificate to show age, marriage license, proof of student status change, depending on the reason.
And how long do employers need to hang on to all this stuff?
Generally, employers and plan administrators need to keep these records for at least 6 years. That's under the ERISA rules, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act.
6 years. Okay.
And given that this often involves sensitive personal info, they need to store it securely, protect privacy.
Right. So we have qualifying events, qualified beneficiaries. What's the actual timeline? When do all these steps need to happen? This sounds like it could get complicated.
It is a very specific multi-step process with strict deadlines. You really have to pay attention.
Okay, break it down for us.
First, the employer has to notify the plan administrator, the entity managing the health plan. They have 30 days to do this after certain events happen.
Which events?
Termination or reduced hours, the employee's death, the employee becoming entitled to Medicare, or the start of employer bankruptcy proceedings. So employer tells the plan admin first. That's step one, within 30 days.
Okay, employer notifies the plan administrator, then what?
Then, in some cases, the qualified beneficiaries themselves have a notification duty. They have 60 days to tell the plan administrator about two specific events.
Which ones are those?
Divorce or legal separation from the employee and a child losing dependent status under the plan rules.
Ah, so things the employer might not know about immediately.
Exactly. And the plan has to have, you know, clear, reasonable procedures for how beneficiaries give that notice.
Okay, so employer notifies admin. Or sometimes a beneficiary notifies admin. What's the administrator's next move and timeline?
Right. Once the plan administrator gets that notice of a qualifying event from whoever, they then have 14 days to send out the COBRA election notice to the qualified beneficiary.
The official notice telling them about their rights and how to sign up.
Exactly. That notice is crucial. Now, if the employer is the plan administrator, which happens sometimes, they get a combined deadline. They have 44 days from the date of the event or the date coverage is lost, whichever is later, to get that election notice out.
Okay, 14 days or 44 if employer is admin. Then the beneficiary gets the notice. How long do they have to decide?
They get a 60-day election period.
60 days? From when?
It starts on the later of two dates. Either the date their coverage would have ended because of the event or the date they actually received that COBRA election notice.
The later of those 2 days. And each person gets their own 60 days.
Yes, independent right for each qualified beneficiary.
Okay, they decide within 60 days they want COBRA. When's the first payment due?
Once they elect, they have another 45 days from the date they elected to make that initial premium payment.
45 days for the first payment.
Right. And that first payment usually covers the period right back to when their old coverage ended up through the current month.
Retroactive coverage. Got it. Yeah. What about ongoing payments?
Subsequent premiums are typically due the first of the month for that month's coverage. And most plans offer a 30-day grace period for those ongoing payments.
30-day grace period. Okay.
And just to mention, there are also specific timelines if someone needs a disability extension, which we can get into later. But yeah, hitting these deadlines is absolutely critical for everyone involved.
Definitely sounds like it. Okay, these notices sound really important. Let's talk more about the rights and responsibilities around them. What different kinds of notices are required?
proper timely notice is, well, absolutely essential for COBRA compliance. The Department of Labor, DOL, has very specific requirements.
Okay, like what's the first one?
First up is the general COBRA notice. Think of it as the initial heads up.
When does that go out?
It has to be given to employees and their spouses within 90 days of when their coverage under the group plan actually starts.
So when they first join the plan.
Exactly. It's proactive. It explains their general rights under COBRA, tells them how to notify the plan if an event happens, gives contact info for the administrator, and outlines their own responsibilities.
Can employers just put this in the main benefits booklet?
They can, if that booklet, the Summary Plan Description, or SPD, is provided within that 90-day window. And these days, electronic delivery is often allowed if they follow DOL rules. The DOL even provides model notices updated in 2023.
Okay, so that's the general notice, kind of an FYI early on.
Yeah.
What about when a qualifying event actually happens?
That's when the COBRA qualifying event notice, often just called the election notice, kicks in.
And the plan administrator has 14 days to send that after they're notified of the event.
Correct. 14 days sharp. And this notice needs to be really detailed.
What kind of details?
It has to clearly explain their right to continue coverage, exactly how much it will cost, the procedures to elect COBRA, list all the available plan options and premiums.
Okay.
Crucially, it also must include clear info about alternatives, like coverage through the ACA health insurance marketplaces.
So they can compare COBRA to the marketplace options.
Yes, that comparison is vital. The notice also needs to explain payment procedures, grace periods, what happens if you pay late, and how to notify the plan about second qualifying events or a disability determination.
Sounds comprehensive. Should employers just use the DOL model notice for this too?
The DOL models are a good starting point, but it's definitely best practice to customize them to reflect the specific details of their health plan. Accuracy is key.
What if someone has an event, but they're actually not eligible for COBRA for some reason?
In that case, the plan administrator has to send a notice of unavailability of continuation coverage.
A rejection notice, basically.
Pretty much. They have 14 days after getting notice of the event to send it. It has to clearly explain why the person isn't eligible and tell them about any appeal rights they might have.
Okay. What if someone's on COBRA, but their coverage is going to end early before the maximum time is up?
They need to get a notice of early termination of continuation coverage.
And that explains why it's ending early.
Yes. It has to state the reason, the exact termination date, and mention any rights they might have to convert the group coverage to an individual policy. This should be sent as soon as practically possible once a decision is made.
Any other notices we should know about?
Well, it's not strictly required by law, but it's a really good administrative practice to send a notice of insufficient payment if a premium comes in short.
Tell them they didn't pay enough.
Right. Specify the shortfall amount and give them a reasonable time to fix it.
Makes sense. And for all these notices, keeping records is vital.
Absolutely critical. Employers and admins need proof they sent the notices, things like certified mail receipts, electronic delivery confirmations, and they need to keep that proof for at least 6 years.
What happens if they mess up the notices?
Failure to provide timely, accurate notices can lead to big trouble. Penalties can be up to $110 per day per affected person. And they could even be held liable for the person's healthcare costs if they weren't properly informed of their COBRA rights.
Ouch. Okay, serious consequences. Let's go back to the election itself, that 60-day window to decide. What are the key things to understand about that period?
Okay, the 60-day clock starts ticking on the later of either the date coverage would have been lost or the date they get the election notice. We covered that. And remember, it's an independent right for each qualified beneficiary.
Right. Each family member decides for themselves. Can the main employee elect for everyone, though?
Yes, the covered employee or the spouse can elect coverage on behalf of the whole family if they choose.
What if someone initially says, no thanks, to COBRA? Can they change their mind within that 60 days?
Yes, absolutely. If you initially waive COBRA, you can revoke that waiver and elect coverage anytime within that original 60-day election period.
Good flexibility.
Yeah.
And once they elect, that first payment is due within 45 days.
Correct. 45 days from the election date. And the coverage becomes retroactive back to when their old coverage ended.
During that election time, do they get the same plan choices as regular employees, like during open enrollment?
Yes. They must be offered the same coverage options as non-COBRA participants, including the right to make changes during any open enrollment periods that might happen while they're eligible or covered.
Okay. And is it good practice for the administrator to confirm the election once it's made?
definitely a good idea. Send something in writing confirming the coverage elected, the premium amount, due dates, payment instructions. Clear communication avoids problems later.
We've covered the election period, the payment deadlines.
Yeah.
Now, how long can COBRA coverage actually last once someone's enrolled? What's the standard duration?
Okay. The standard length depends entirely on the type of qualifying event that made you eligible in the first place.
What are the main periods?
For the most common events, termination of employment or reduction in work hours, the maximum coverage period is generally 18 months.
18 months. Okay. What about other events?
For other qualifying events like death of the employee, divorce, or legal separation, the employee becoming entitled to Medicare, or a child losing dependent status, the maximum coverage can last for up to 36 months.
So 18 or 36 months are the basic maximums?
Those are the standard federal maximums, yes.
Are there any situations where coverage might go beyond those 18 or 36 months? Any extensions possible?
Yes. There are a couple of key ways the standard period can be extended. One is for disability.
A disability extension. How does that work?
If a qualified beneficiary is determined by the Social Security Administration, SSA, to have been disabled either at the time of the qualifying event or within the first 60 days of their initial COBRA coverage starting,
yeah,
then the coverage period can be extended for an additional 11 months.
So 18 months plus 11 months. 29 months total.
Exactly. A total of up to 29 months. But there's a catch with notification.
What's that?
The beneficiary or their representative has to notify the plan administrator about the SSA disability determination. They have to do it within 60 days of getting the SSA notice, and it has to be before the initial 18-month COBRA period runs out.
Okay, specific timing for the notice. Does this extension only apply to the disabled person?
No. Interestingly, the disability extension applies to all qualified family members receiving COBRA due to that event, not just the disabled individual.
That's helpful. Any change in cost during the extension?
Yes. During those extra 11 months, the plan is allowed to increase the premium. It can go up from 102% to as much as 150% of the regular premium rate.
150%? Wow. That's a significant jump.
It is.
Okay, so disability is one way to get an extension. What about if something else happens while someone is already on COBRA, a second qualifying event?
Yes, that's the other main way to potentially get an extension. If a second qualifying event happens during the initial COBRA period.
What kind of second event?
Things like the death of the covered employee, divorce or legal separation, the employee becoming entitled to Medicare, or a dependent child losing their dependent status. If one of those happens while someone is on the initial 18 months of COBRA or the 29 months if they have a disability extension,
yeah,
then the coverage for the beneficiaries affected by that second event can be extended out to a total of 36 months, measured from the date of the first qualifying event.
Okay, wait. 36 months from the first event, not 18 plus another 18 or 36.
Correct. The absolute maximum is generally 36 months from the date the initial qualifying event occurred.
And who does this second event extension apply to? The employee to?
Generally, no. This extension to 36 months usually only applies to the spouse and dependent children who were qualified beneficiaries from the first event, not the former employee.
Got it. And the second event has to be something that would have caused a loss of coverage on its own.
Yes, exactly. And the beneficiary had to be covered under the plan when the first event happened.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Employee gets terminated, starts 18 months of COBRA. 10 months later, the employee sadly passes away. That's a second qualifying event for the spouse and kids. Their COBRA can now last up to 36 months from the date of the initial termination.
Okay, that makes sense.
Or employee's hours are cut, starts 18 months COBRA. 15 months later, the employee and spouse get divorced. That's a second event for the former spouse. Their COBRA can extend to 36 months from the date the hours were initially cut.
And if a second event happens during a disability extension?
Same principle. The total coverage still maxes out at 36 months from the first event. The second event doesn't add time beyond that 36-month ceiling.
Okay, let's circle back to the money side again. The premium payments. What are the key rules and things to watch out for?
Right, the cost. As we said, the premium is generally up to 102% of the full cost of the coverage employer plus employee share plus 2% admin.
And 150% during that 11-month disability extension.
Correct. Now, that initial payment, remember, is due within 45 days after electing, and it makes the coverage retroactive.
Right. What about the ongoing monthly payments?
Usually due monthly, often the first of the month for that month's coverage, and most plans give that 30-day grace period.
Okay. How is payment considered made? When they receive it, or?
It's considered made on the date it's sent. Usually that means the postmark date if you're mailing a check.
Good to know. What happens if someone pays, but it's not quite the full amount? Maybe they miscalculated slightly.
Insufficient payments. There are rules for that. If the shortfall is not considered significantly less than the full amount.
What's significantly less?
The rule is it's not significant if the shortfall is the lesser of $50 or 10% of the amount due.
Okay, so a small mistake.
Right. If it's not significantly less, the plan has two choices. They can just accept it as payment in full for that period, or they have to notify the beneficiary of the exact amount still owed and give them a reasonable time, usually 30 days, to pay the difference.
But if the payment is significantly short, more than $50 or 10% under?
Then the plan can treat it as if no payment was made at all, and coverage could potentially lapse after the grace period.
Okay. Is it standard for plans to send out monthly bills or reminders for COBRA?
It's definitely a best practice, though not strictly legally required in all cases. Sending monthly premium notices stating the amount due, the due date, the grace period, and the consequences of non-payment helps avoid confusion and disputes.
Seems sensible. And just to reconfirm, they can't demand payment with the election form, right?
Absolutely not. The beneficiary must get the full 60-day election period, then the separate 45-day period to make the first payment. They can't be forced to pay up front just to elect.
Okay. We know how long COBRA can last, but are there situations where it might end early before hitting that 18, 29, or 36-month maximum?
Yes, definitely. There are several specific reasons why COBRA coverage can be terminated before the maximum period is up.
What's the most common one?
By far the most common is failure to pay the premiums on time. If you don't pay by the end of the grace period, your coverage will end. It stops as of the end of the last period you fully paid for.
Makes sense. Pay to play. What else?
Another reason is if the beneficiary gets covered under another group health plan, say through a new job or a spouse's job.
Does it matter if the new plan has waiting periods or exclusions?
Since the ACA banned pre-existing condition exclusions back in 2014, that's less of an issue. The main thing now is just that coverage under the new group plan actually has to begin. Just being eligible for another plan isn't enough to terminate COBRA. You have to actually enroll and have the new coverage start.
Okay. What about Medicare? If someone becomes eligible for Medicare while on COBRA?
Yes, that can be a reason for early termination. If a beneficiary becomes entitled to Medicare after they've already elected COBRA, their individual COBRA coverage can end.
Just theirs, not the whole family's.
Usually just the person who becomes Medicare entitled. It generally doesn't terminate COBRA for other covered family members. Now, if they were already on Medicare before electing COBRA, that usually doesn't trigger early termination.
Interesting distinction.
Now,
any other reasons for early termination?
If someone got the disability extension, their coverage can end early if the SSA later determines they're no longer disabled. The termination happens a bit after that final SSA notice.
Okay.
Also a big one. If the employer simply stops providing any group health plan to any of its employees. If the plan itself disappears, COBRA disappears too.
If a whole company plan goes away.
Right. And finally, coverage can be terminated for cause, like fraud or intentional misrepresentation related to the plan. But the reasons have to be the same as they would be for terminating a regular non-COBRA participant, and they get the same appeal rights.
And in all these early termination cases, the plan has to send a notice.
Yes, they must provide that notice of early termination as soon as reasonably possible.
So, COBRA has a definite end date, either the maximum period or an early termination event. Mm. When it does end, what happens next? What are the options for people to get ongoing health insurance?
That's a critical transition point. When COBRA runs out, there are several potential paths forward for coverage.
Like what?
One possibility is a conversion policy. If the employer's plan offered that option, the person coming off COBRA usually has a window of time, often around 180 days before COBRA ends, to apply for an individual policy directly from the same insurance carrier.
Converting the group coverage to individual.
Sort of. But be warned, these conversion policies often have much higher premiums and might offer less comprehensive benefits than the group plan they're leaving. They're not always a great deal.
Okay, so conversion is one option. Maybe not the best. What else?
A really significant option now is the ACA Health Insurance Marketplace.
Because losing COBRA triggers INSEP.
Exactly. When your COBRA coverage ends, either by reaching the maximum period or due to early termination, usually, except for non-payment, that triggers a 60-day special enrollment period in the marketplace.
So you have 60 days after COBRA ends to pick a marketplace plan.
Yes. That's a key pathway to new coverage, potentially with subsidies.
What about other group coverage? Like if you get a new job right when COBRA ends?
Yep. The end of COBRA also generally triggers a special enrollment period to get onto a new group health plan if one becomes available, like through a new employer or maybe a spouse's employer.
A Medicare.
For people nearing 65, the end of COBRA might line up with Medicare eligibility. They'd need to enroll in Medicare. But, and this is crucial, they need to understand the Medicare enrollment rules before COBRA ends. Delaying Medicare enrollment, especially Part B, because you have COBRA, can lead to permanent late enrollment penalties later on. COBRA doesn't count as creditable coverage to avoid those Medicare penalties.
Wow, that's a huge trap to be aware of.
It really is. Finally, some states might have additional rules providing guaranteed issue rights for individual policies when COBRA ends. Worth checking state-specific laws.
So the bottom line is, don't wait until the last day of COBRA to figure out what's next.
Absolutely not. Planning should start well before COBRA ends. Compare all the options, conversion, marketplace with potential subsidies, new group plans, Medicare. Often a subsidized marketplace plan is going to be more affordable and comprehensive than a conversion policy.
We touched on this, but let's really dig into the COBRA and ACA relationship. How did the ACA fundamentally change things for COBRA?
The ACA's creation of the marketplaces, as we've said, it truly revolutionized COBRA's role. It shifted it from often being the only safety net
to being one option among several.
Exactly. And recognizing this, the Department of Labor actually revised the standard COBRA election notices.
How so?
They now have to include much more detailed, clearer information about those marketplace options, including the potential for subsidies to lower the cost. It helps people make a truly informed comparison.
And didn't the ACA also make it easier to get insurance even with pre-existing conditions? How did that affect COBRA's appeal?
Absolutely. The ACA's guaranteed issue rules meant insurers couldn't deny coverage based on health status anymore. And community rating limited how much premiums could vary based on health.
Right.
This significantly reduced the unique value COBRA used to have for people with health conditions who previously had few other choices. Now they have potentially more affordable, accessible alternatives in the marketplace.
I also remember the ACA let young adults stay on their parents' plans longer. Did that cut down on COBRA usage?
Yes. That provision allowing dependents to stay on until age 26 significantly reduced the number of COBRA elections triggered by simply aging off a parent's plan. That used to be a pretty common reason people took COBRA.
So the ACA provided new options and reduced some of the demand for COBRA. Did it change anything for employers regarding COBRA itself?
Well, the ACA's employer mandate, the rule requiring large employers to offer affordable coverage, is separate from COBRA. But it did create new incentives for employers to track COBRA eligibility and offers very carefully.
Why is that?
Because offering COBRA can help an employer demonstrate they are offering coverage, which is relevant for complying with those ACA employer responsibility rules and avoiding penalties. So good record keeping became even more important.
Okay.
The ACA also created the SHOP marketplace for small businesses, adding another layer to the small employer insurance landscape, which sometimes interacts with state mini COBRA laws.
And one more thing, didn't the ACA mandate free preventive care? Does that apply to COBRA too?
Yes, it does. The requirement for most plans to cover certain preventive services with no cost sharing, like deductibles or copays, extends to COBRA coverage as well. That adds value for COBRA participants.
So ACA created alternatives, changed incentives, but didn't get rid of COBRA obligations.
Mm. Exactly. It didn't eliminate COBRA, but it definitely made the decision-making process for people facing a qualifying event much more complex. You really have to compare now.
Okay, comparison is key. Let's talk hard numbers. Comparing the cost of COBRA versus an ACA marketplace plan, can we break that down further?
Definitely. Let's look at premiums first. COBRA, as we know, is typically 102% of the full plan cost. No discounts.
Right.
Marketplace premiums vary by age, location, plan level, bronze, silver, gold, platinum, insurance company. But the huge difference is the potential for those premium tax credits, the subsidies.
Which can make marketplace plans much cheaper for many people.
Often, yes. Especially for middle-income folks, the subsidies can dramatically lower the monthly cost compared to paying full whack for COBRA.
What about costs beyond the premium? Deductibles, copays?
Yeah.
When you actually use the insurance.
COBRA keeps the same cost-sharing structure as the employer plan. Same deductible, copays, out-of-pocket max.
Okay.
Marketplace plans have standardized cost-sharing levels by metal tier. And here's another key ACA feature, cost-sharing reductions, or CSRs.
CSRs. What are those?
If your income is below a certain level, usually 250% of the federal poverty level, and you choose a silver plan in the marketplace, you can get extra help that lowers your deductible, copays, and out-of-pocket max.
So silver plans can be extra affordable for lower income folks due to both premium credits and these CSRs.
Exactly. Gold and platinum plans have higher premiums, but generally lower cost sharing when you get care. Bronze has lower premiums, but higher cost sharing. So there's a trade-off.
So it's not just the monthly premium sticker price. You have to look at the whole picture, potential cost.
Absolutely. You need to compare the total potential cost. Consider the pre-chem after any subsidy, how much healthcare you expect to use, prescription drug coverage and costs, whether your doctors are in-network, and what the deductible and out-of-pocket maximums are for both options.
Can we run through a quick example?
Sure. Let's imagine a family of four loses employer coverage. Let's say the employer plan costs $2,000 in Southern month total, and the employer paid a good chunk. Their COBRA cost might be around $2,040 a month, 102%. A comparable silver marketplace plan might cost, say, $1,800 mumpser before subsidies. But if their income is maybe 250% in the poverty level, they could get significant premium tax credits, maybe bringing their cost down to $400 fellow $500 a month. Plus, they'd likely get CSRs on that silver plan, lowering their deductible and copays.
Wow, so COBRA at over $2,000 versus marketplace, potentially around $400, $500 plus lower out of pocket. That's a massive difference.
Huge potential savings. And remember, both COBRA and marketplace premiums are paid post-tax, but the marketplace subsidies are tax credits that directly reduce the cost or your tax liability. Also, COBRA costs are usually stable, while marketplace subsidies can change if your income changes during the year.
We talked about losing employer coverage triggering both COBRA eligibility and a marketplace special enrollment period, SKP. Can you explain more about how those SEPs work, especially in relation to the COBRA decision?
Sure. Losing your job-based health coverage for almost any reason, like job loss, aging off a parent's plan gives you a 60-day SEP to enroll in a marketplace plan. That window starts from the date your old coverage ends.
60 days after coverage ends.
Right. You can even apply up to 60 days before it ends to avoid a gap. Now, when you become eligible for COBRA due to job loss or reduced hours, that also triggers a 60-day marketplace SEP.
At the same time.
Yes. Critically, the 60-day COBRA election period and the 60-day marketplace SEP run concurrently at the same time.
Ah, so you have those 60 days to weigh both options side by side.
Exactly. It's a crucial decision window. But here's a really important point people often miss.
What's that?
If you elect COBRA and then later voluntarily drop it mid-year, outside the main marketplace open enrollment, that generally does not give you another SEP to sign up for a marketplace plan.
Oh, so if you choose COBRA, you might be stuck with it until the next open enrollment, unless something else happens.
In many cases, yes. You could be locked out of the marketplace until the next annual open enrollment, unless you have another qualifying life event.
What about when COBRA just runs out naturally, after the 18 or 36 months?
That situation exhausting your maximum COBRA period does trigger a new 60-day marketplace SEP.
Okay, so voluntarily dropping COBRA mid-year, usually no SEP. COBRA naturally expiring, yes, SEP.
Correct. That's a key distinction. You can elect COBRA initially and then switch to a marketplace plan later during the annual open enrollment period or when your COBRA exhausts, or potentially if your employer stops contributing to the premium, less common. But that initial choice during the overlapping 60-day windows is really strategic. Choosing COBRA might limit your ability to switch to a cheaper marketplace plan later.
Timing is everything. Let's go deeper on those ACA financial helpers, the premium tax credits, PTCs, and cost-sharing reductions, CSRs. How do they stack up against paying for COBRA?
Okay, PTCs are the federal subsidies lowering your monthly marketplace premium, generally for incomes between 100% to 400% of the federal poverty level, FPL, with enhanced help above 400% through 2025 currently.
And you can get them paid upfront each month.
Yes, usually. Pay directly to the insurer to lower your bill. Or you can claim the credit on your tax return later. You do have to reconcile it when you file taxes based on your actual final income.
Okay. And CSRs?
CSRs are different. They lower your out-of-pocket costs, deductibles, copays, coinsurance. But only if you enroll in a silver-level marketplace plan and your income is below 250% FPL. They make using your insurance cheaper.
Only silver plans under 250% FPL.
Got it. Now compare that to COBRA. With COBRA, you pay the full 102% premium, no PTCs available, no CSRs available, period.
Can we do another quick example to really hammer this home?
Sure. Let's take a single 45-year-old earning $35,000 a year. That's around 250% FPL in most places. They lose job-based coverage that costs maybe $700 a month total.
Okay.
Their COBRA costs would be roughly $714 a month. 102% of $700. That's about $8,568 a year.
Right.
Now, they look at the marketplace. A silver plan might cost, say, $500 a month before subsidies, but with their income, they'd likely get a PTC reducing their premium significantly, maybe down to $150 a month. That's only $1,800 a year.
Huge difference already.
Because they're under 250% FPL and chose silver, they'd also get CSRs. That means their deductible would be much lower, their copay is smaller compared to the original employer plan under COBRA.
So way lower premium and lower cost when they actually get care. COBRA looks much more expensive in that scenario.
They're dramatically more expensive. Also, remember, PTCs adjust if your income changes during the year. COBRA costs stay fixed unless the whole plan changes. Tax-wise, you might deduct COBRA premiums as medical expenses if you itemize and meet the threshold, while the PTC is a direct tax credit.
Okay, the financial comparison often favors the marketplace, especially with subsidies. But what about non-financial factors? What else should people weigh when making this choice?
Absolutely critical question. Cost isn't everything. A huge factor is continuity of care.
Keeping your doctors.
Exactly. How important is it for you to keep your current doctors and specialists? Especially if you're managing a chronic condition. COBRA guarantees access to that same network. Marketplace plans have different networks you must check if your preferred providers are in-network.
That could be a deal breaker for some people.
It often is. Also, check prescription drug coverage formularies differ. Switching plans might mean switching medications or needing new prior authorizations. That potential disruption might justify paying the higher COBRA cost, at least temporarily.
Okay, continuity of care is big. What else?
Think about your income stability. If your income is likely to drop, like after a job loss, marketplace subsidies might increase, making it even cheaper. COBRA costs stay high regardless.
Good point.
Consider your family's needs. Maybe it makes sense to split coverage. Perhaps one parent takes COBRA to keep specific doctors, while kids go on a cheaper marketplace plan or CGIP Medicaid if eligible.
Splitting coverage is an option.
It can be, yes. Also, think about cash flow. COBRA demands that full premium upfront each month. Marketplace subsidies lower the monthly hit. Can you afford the high COBRA costs during unemployment?
And the risk of gaps in coverage during transitions.
Right. Need a plan for continuous coverage. And think long term. How long do you expect to need this coverage? Is COBRA just a short bridge until a new job with benefits? Are you nearing Medicare? That context matters.
Lots to consider beyond just the monthly premium. Okay, let's shift gears a bit and talk history. The American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA, back in 2021, had a big COBRA piece, didn't it?
It did, yes. ARPA included a temporary but very significant provision, a 100% federal subsidy for COBRA premiums for certain eligible individuals.
100%. So free COBRA for a time.
Essentially, yes. For assistance eligible individuals, or AEIs. This subsidy ran from April 1st to September 30th, 2021.
Who qualified as an AEI?
Generally, people eligible for COBRA because of an involuntary termination of employment, not for gross misconduct, or due to a reduction in hours. Importantly, it also covered people who were eligible but hadn't elected COBRA yet, or had elected but dropped it before April 1st, 2021.
But not people who quit voluntarily.
Correct. Voluntary terminations didn't qualify, and the subsidy ended if you became eligible for other group coverage or Medicare.
How did it work administratively? Did people just not get billed?
Employers or plans paid the premium up front, basically. Then they got reimbursed by the government through refundable payroll tax credits.
Ah, so the money flowed through the employer.
Right. And there were mandatory notices employers had to send out about this subsidy. It was a big administrative lift.
I bet. Did it have a big impact?
It definitely influenced enrollment decisions for that six-month period. It highlighted the potential benefits of subsidized continuation coverage, but also the administrative challenges. The program's expired now, but the experience might inform future policy ideas, especially in economic downturns.
The COVID pandemic also brought other temporary COBRA changes related to deadlines, right?
Yes. The COVID National Emergency Declaration led to what was called the outbreak period. This started back in March 2020 and officially ended July 10th, 2023.
And during that outbreak period,
certain COBRA deadlines were effectively paused or extended. Things like the 60-day election window, the 45-day initial payment deadline, the 30-day grace periods for ongoing payments, and even the deadlines for beneficiaries to notify the plan about qualifying events or disability.
So people got more time for everything COBRA related.
Pretty much, yes. Later guidance clarified there was generally a maximum one-year extension for any specific deadline applied on a rolling basis for each individual.
Must have been confusing to track.
It was very complex administratively. Tracking all those individual rolling deadlines, communicating clearly, handling premium collection for retroactive coverage once the extension's lifted, it was a challenge.
When did things go back to the normal deadlines?
The outbreak period ended July 10th, 2023. So starting July 11th, 2023, the standard COBRA timeframes resume for any pending or future deadlines.
What were the lessons learned from that whole experience?
Definitely the need for robust tracking systems, very clear communication through multiple channels, maybe offering payment plans for retroactive premiums, and meticulous documentation. It really highlighted the need for flexible admin systems during emergencies.
Okay, moving to more recent guidance from the Department of Labor, say from 2020 up to now, what have been the key developments?
The DOL has been active. One big thing was the electronic disclosure final rule.
Making it easier to send notices electronically.
Yes, expanding the options, setting up a notice and access framework where notices can be posted online under certain conditions with initial paper notices and opt-out rights.
What else?
They also updated the model COBRA notices again in 2023.
How are they updated?
Enhanced marketplace info, clearer explanations overall, better language on Medicare interactions, improved readability, and providing translations, trying to make them more user-friendly.
And what about DOL enforcement? What are they focusing on?
They've been really emphasizing timely election notices, making sure premium handling is correct. They're also looking more closely at employers who outsource COBRA administration to third parties, TPAs.
Checking up on the vendors.
Right. And ensuring the notices properly explain the ACA marketplace alternatives. Also, ensuring COBRA complies with mental health parity rules and the No Surprises Act protections against surprise medical bills.
So making sure COBRA coverage plays by all the broader healthcare rules.
Exactly. And clarifying fiduciary duties, especially when using TTAs who's responsible for what, the importance of monitoring the vendor. Staying up to date with EBSA guidance is really key for compliance.
Now, what about the Secure 2.0 Act? That was mainly about retirement, but did it have any spillover effects relevant to COBRA?
It did have a few indirect impacts. Secure 2.0 from 2022 primarily focused on retirement savings, yes.
Right.
It created new emergency savings accounts linked to retirement plans for non-highly compensated employees. Funds from these can be withdrawn, penalty-free, potentially to pay for things like COBRA premiums during unemployment. Limited amounts, but still a potential source.
Interesting. Anything else?
It also officially expanded the reasons for 401k hardship withdrawals to explicitly include paying healthcare premiums, which covers COBRA, and it made getting those hardship withdrawals a bit easier administratively.
So easier access to retirement funds for emergencies like paying COBRA.
Potentially, yes. There were also some changes affecting HSAs, more flexibility, telehealth interactions, higher contribution limits, which matters if you have an HSA-eligible plan under COBRA, and some minor rules on retirement plan overpayments that could tangentially relate if COBRA overpayments occur. Not direct COBRA changes, but touches on financial resources people might use.
Okay. What about even more recent stuff? Regulatory changes, court decisions from, say, 2023 into 2025 that affect COBRA?
Yeah, the regulatory environment keeps moving. Implementation of the Consolidated Appropriations Act continues pushing transparency.
Transparency like what?
Requiring plans, including COBRA, to post machine-readable files of provider rates, provide advanced cost estimates, EOBs, ensure provider directories are accurate, more visibility into costs.
And the No Surprises Act implementation?
Still ongoing. Refining protections against surprise out-of-network bills, the dispute resolution process, the rules around good faith estimates, all relevant if you're navigating coverage choices around COBRA.
What else?
Continued focus on prescription drug cost reporting, mental health parity analysis documentation. These apply to COBRA plans too. There was also a Supreme Court case in 2023 clarifying employers' duties when monitoring their TPAs, which directly impacts outsourced COBRA administration.
So more responsibility on employers, even if they hire a vendor.
Yes, and we've seen various circuit court rulings on things like what proof is needed to show you paid your COBRA premium, burden of proof in disputes, rules about mail delivery presumptions. These shape day-to-day administration.
Any emerging tech issues?
There's early guidance emerging on using AI and benefits administration. Think automated eligibility checks, disclosures, non-discrimination safeguards that could eventually impact how COBRA is managed.
And DOL enforcement trends.
Still seeing big settlements and class actions over deficient COBRA notices, increased scrutiny on non-English notices, overall readability. Enforcement actions really set practical compliance standards. The trend is definitely towards more transparency and stricter administrative requirements.
Okay, Let's revisit those special situations one last time, drilling down a bit. Disability extensions. Can you detail the criteria again?
Sure. For the 11-month disability extension, total 29 months, two main things. First, an official disability determination from the Social Security Administration, SSA.
Okay, SSA has to say you're disabled.
Right. Second, the disability must have started either at the time of the qualifying event, like job loss, or within the first 60 days after COBRA coverage began.
The disability had to exist early on, even if SSA confirms it later.
Exactly. The SSA determination might come later, but the onset date is key. And remember, this extension applies to the whole family on COBRA, not just the disabled person.
Got it. And the notification rules.
The beneficiary or their rep has to notify the plan administrator within 60 days of receiving the SSA determination notice. And they have to do it before the initial 18-month COBRA period ends. The plan must have reasonable procedures for this notification and can ask for proof, like the SSA letter.
What if SSA later says the person is no longer disabled?
Then the extension can end early. Usually coverage stops the first of the month following 30 days after that final SSA notice, or at the end of the original 18 months, whichever is later. The beneficiary needs to tell the plan within 30 days if SSA finds they're no longer disabled.
And the premium during the extension
can go up to 150% of the regular rate for those extra 11 months for everyone covered by the extension. Plan has to give advance notice of that increase.
Okay, that clarifies disability extensions. Now, multiple qualifying events. Can you walk through that extension again?
Right, the second qualifying event extension. This can push coverage out to 36 months total, measured from the first event.
What counts as a second event?
Death of the employee, divorce legal separation, employee becoming entitled to Medicare, or a child losing dependent status.
And it has to happen during the initial COBRA period?
Yes, during the initial 18 months, or 29, if on a disability extension. And critically, it only extends coverage for the spouse and dependent children, not the former employee.
Only spouse and kids get the bump to 36 months from the second event.
Correct. And the second event must be something that would have caused a loss of coverage on its own, and the person must have been covered when the first event happened.
Notification required for the second event, too.
Yes. Beneficiaries need to notify the plan administrator within 60 days of the second event occurring. Again, plans need reasonable procedures for this.
So, just to recap the examples. Termination, event one. Then employee dies 10 months later, event two. Spouse kids get up to 36 months from termination date.
Exactly. Or hours reduced, event one. Then divorce 15 months later, event two. Former spouse gets up to 36 months from the date. Hours were reduced.
And if the second event happens during a disability extension, still capped at 36 months from the first event.
Still capped at 36 months from the first event. No stacking beyond that.
Medicare interactions seem particularly tricky. Can you detail those scenarios again?
Yeah.
Medicare before the COBRA event.
Right. If the employee gets Medicare before the qualifying event, like termination or reduced hours.
Yeah.
Then COBRA for the other beneficiaries, spouse, kids, not the employee, can last longer. It goes to the later of 36 months from the Medicare entitlement date, or are 18 months from the qualifying event date.
So the spouse and kids might get more than 18 months in that specific situation.
Potentially, yes. Depends on the timing.
What if someone gets Medicare after they've already started COBRA?
Then their individual COBRA coverage can be terminated early. Just the person who got Medicare. Doesn't affect other family members on COBRA. Plans have to state this rule.
And how do payments work if someone has both Medicare and COBRA? Who pays first?
Medicare always pays first, primary. COBRA pays second, always. COBRA might cover things Medicare doesn't, or help with Medicare's deductibles and coinsurance. Understanding that coordination is key to avoid surprise bills.
And the big warning about Medicare Part B penalties.
Yes, this is crucial. Delaying enrollment in Medicare Part B when you first become eligible, even if you have COBRA, can lead to permanent late enrollment penalties on your Part B premium. COBRA does not count as the kind of active employer coverage that lets you delay Part B without penalty.
So people turning 65 while on COBRA need to be extremely careful about signing up for Medicare Part B on time.
Extremely careful. Missing your initial enrollment period for Medicare because you think COBRA covers, you can lead to penalties and potentially long gaps in coverage later when COBRA ends and you have to wait for a Medicare general enrollment period. Huge potential long-term financial hit. Needs careful planning.
Okay, another complex area. Employer bankruptcy. How does that mess with COBRA?
Bankruptcy can create really unique and often difficult COBRA situations. If the bankruptcy itself causes people to lose health coverage, that can be a qualifying event.
Who might qualify in a bankruptcy?
It can apply to covered retirees, their spouse surviving spouse's dependents, sometimes even active employees if they lose coverage due to the bankruptcy. The qualifying event date is usually when the proceedings begin.
Does bankruptcy change how long COBRA lasts?
Yes, potentially dramatically. For retirees and their spouses where bankruptcy is the event, COBRA can last until the retiree's death. For surviving spouse children of retirees, it can be 36 months after the retiree's death. Very different from standard rules.
Wow, lifetime coverage possible for some retirees.
In that specific bankruptcy scenario, yes. But the type of bankruptcy matters.
How so?
Chapter 7 liquidation means the business usually shuts down. Health plans often terminate. COBRA might technically exist, but be unenforceable if there's no plan left. Trustee usually terminates the plan officially.
So COBRA might just vanish in Chapter 7. What about Chapter 11 reorganization?
Business tries to keep operating. Health plans might continue, or they could be modified or terminated with court approval. Retiree benefits are often at risk. If the plan continues, COBRA obligations generally continue too.
But the bankruptcy itself causes practical problems.
Huge administrative challenges, delayed notices, inaccurate info, trouble processing premiums, record keeping suffers. People might have legal COBRA rights, but find them hard to enforce. And state guarantee funds usually don't cover self-insured plans, which are common.
So what's the best alternative if your employer goes bankrupt?
Losing coverage due to bankruptcy does trigger a marketplace SEP. That's often the more reliable path when COBRA is uncertain. You'll need documentation of the bankruptcy and plan termination.
Advice for someone in that situation.
Keep all plan COBRA documents, look at alternatives immediately, understand court limits on enforcing COBRA, monitor the bankruptcy case, document everything, especially attempts to pay premiums. Be proactive.
Okay. What about multi-employer plans, those union plans covering workers across different companies? How does COBRA work there?
Right. Multi-employer plans, common in construction, trucking, etc., they have some unique COBRA rules.
Like determining who's covered by COBRA.
Yes. Federal COBRA applies based on the total employees of all contributing employers, usually. And state mini-COBRA laws often exempt these plans.
And what triggers COBRA? Is it leaving one company?
Not necessarily. Leaving one contributing employer might not be a qualifying event if you still meet the plan's overall eligibility rules, like through hours worked for other contributing employers. The qualifying event is usually losing eligibility under the plan's rules.
Like not getting enough hours total or leaving the industry.
Exactly. Insufficient hours across all employers, hour bank running out, leaving the trade, or maybe an employer withdrawing from the plan altogether.
Who handles the COBRA notices then? The individual company or the main plan?
Usually the individual employer notifies the central plan administrator, often a joint board of trustees. But it's the plan administrator, not the former employer, who sends the election notices to beneficiaries. Participants also usually notify the central plan directly about divorce or dependency changes. Communication is key.
And the coverage periods, 18, 36 months.
Standard 18, 36-month rules apply, measured from the date eligibility under the plan was lost. Disability and second qualifying event rules also apply.
How are premiums calculated? Based on the old employer's cost?
Often not. It's usually based on a blended rate reflecting the cost across the entire pool of employers in the plan. The plan sets standard COBRA rates based on average costs.
Any other wrinkles with multi-employer plans?
Many have reciprocity agreements with similar plans in other areas. This can sometimes be an alternative to COBRA for mobile workers. How that interacts with COBRA needs clear explanation. Employers in these plans need really good communication with the plan admin.
Okay, last special category. Trade Adjustment Assistance, TAA, and the Health Coverage Tax Credit, HCTC. What's the latest on those?
Okay, TAA is the federal program for workers who lose jobs due to foreign trade, gives training, income support, etc. Historically, it linked to health coverage help via the HCTC.
The HCTC paid a big chunk of premiums.
Yes, it was a refundable tax credit, covered 72.5% initially for eligible folks. TAA recipients, some PBGC pensioners. It applied to COBRA premiums and other qualified coverage.
Well, what's the current status? Is HCTC still active?
Crucially, no. The HCTC expired most recently at the end of December 2023 and has not been reauthorized since then.
So that tax credit help is gone for now?
Correct. It has a history of expiring and being brought back later, so it's worth monitoring legislation. But as of now, it's inactive.
But does TAA itself still have any connection to COBRA, even without the HCTC?
Yes. This is important. Even with HCTC expired, individuals certified as eligible for TAA still get a second chance to elect COBRA.
A special COBRA election period just for TAA folks.
Exactly. It starts when their TAA eligibility begins and lasts 60 days. If they elect COBRA then, coverage is retroactive to the start of their TAA eligibility. This is vital for workers who might have initially turned down COBRA but later qualified for TAA.
So the TAA special election for COBRA still exists, even if the tax credit doesn't.
Correct. There used to be a COBRA extension tied to HCTC for some PBGC folks, too, but that's also inactive without HCTC. So right now, TAA workers without HCTC are looking at marketplace plans with potential subsidies, Medicaid, state programs, or new job coverage like everyone else.
Key message. HCTC is gone for now, but the TAA special COBRA election period is still a thing.
Precisely. And keep TAA eligibility documents just in case HCTC comes back retroactively someday.
Wow. We have covered a massive amount of ground today, from COBRA's origins, how it works, the whole ACA interplay, all these special situations, recent changes. What are the absolute key takeaways for listeners?
Okay, most important. COBRA is a crucial temporary safety net if you lose job-based health insurance due to a qualifying event.
Big but. Yeah.
You must understand the costs. They can be very high. Understand its limits, especially that it's temporary. And crucially, know your alternatives, particularly the ACA marketplace, and compare them carefully before deciding.
And things keep changing.
Constantly. The regulatory landscape evolves. Court decisions happen. Staying informed is vital for employers managing COBRA and for individuals who might need it.
All right. And as we wrap up, here's a final thought for you, the listener, to chew on. With jobs changing more often and more people working non-traditionally, is the COBRA system designed almost 40 years ago still the best fit for today's workforce? Or do we need further changes, legislative or regulatory, to make sure people have continuous, affordable health care during those career shifts? Something to think about as you navigate your own career or manage benefits.
Absolutely. We really encourage you to look at your own specific situation, use the resources mentioned. If you're facing a qualifying event, do that detailed comparison. COBRA versus marketplace. Factor in health needs, finances, long-term goals. For employers, insurance pros keep learning, stay updated on guidance. That's key for compliance and providing real value.
And if you still have questions after this deep dive, don't hesitate to reach out to a benefits specialist, an HR professional, or check out the resources from the Department of Labor website. The info today is a solid base, but individual situations really vary. Personalized advice is often best.
Well said.
Thank you for taking this deep dive with us today.